in a way, the first idea that we had was to find a way to approach the collection of the Musée des Instruments de Musique using or being used, it's not very clear, a series of algorithms. One of them being a sketch detector or recognizer. The idea was to, in some ways, find through the use of this tool a way to sort of be surprised by what was in this collection. So the sketch recognizer, essentially what it does is to try analyzing lines, to associate these lines to a series of models that are related to labels. So for instance, a series of labels or a series of lines and a series of configurations of lines are related to the label angel, for instance. And when it detects lines that somehow correspond to this pattern, it makes the correlation between this configuration and the label angel. And so we were interested to use it in some ways the way of seeing of this algorithm to look at the musical instruments, knowing that it wouldn't be easy for the algorithm to sort of extract those contours and read these instruments. We had then to find a way to transform the images of this collection into contours. So for that, we had another interlocutor, which was an algorithm that would trace the contours of that we would detect in the images. So we would have to, in a way, create a sort of dialogue between one algorithm that would draw the contours it would detect in an image and an algorithm that would interpret these drawings. So that's in a way the first scenario through which we were expecting to find surprises and in a way diversions. So how these ways of seeing and this sort of difficult dialogue between the photographs, the two algorithms would sort of create misunderstandings and openings in interpretation.
Maybe I can just say, so in the Piano Fabric installation, so the first installation, indeed, we really chose to then the objects that came out of Carmentis, out of the formal website and archive system of the Music Instrument Museum. We applied this contour algorithm, and actually what we sort of did was then produce this. When you came to the installation, you basically just had a stack of papers that were like a coloring book that with just pages with outlines in black. And the idea was actually to immediately put the visitor into this role of also kind of acting as a recognizer, as this in taking a look at these often fragmentary and kind of incomplete contour traces, and given some crayons and markers that were there at the table, encouraged them to start to make their own interpretations. The setup was such that it was like a kind of a stop animation table. So you had a camera suspended looking down at the drawing surface and a big button to press. And what people found is that if they put their picture under the camera and pushed the button, it was photographed, and this algorithm that was doing a sketch recognition then would say, is it a skyscraper? Or is it a Angel, indeed, it could have said. And what was really interesting was that, yeah, in the installation view, what you had, and that was part of actually what we were interested in, you saw this interesting back and forth between, you know, you are interpreting the shapes that you see, then this algorithm is interpreting it perhaps in a very different way. And sometimes people would go along with the algorithm then, would start, there was an example of, I remember one shape, which might have been a whistle, was sort of being drawn like a kind of koala bear. And then suddenly the recognition said, is it a cactus? And then she chose to start to give her bear spikes to see, you know, if the algorithm, because then you could press the button again and again and again, and each time get a new interpretation. So it was really interesting to see, yeah, this kind of back and forth. And some people found it this kind of collaboration with the computer in a sort of funny way to free associate. So yeah, that was in other cases, people actually chose to be much more resistant actually to what it showed. I remember one drawing was being interpreted as a skyscraper, which it turns out is one of the labels that often comes up. I mean, there were certain kinds of recognitions that were more likely than others, most likely because what the algorithm was being given was quite different from what it had been trained with. And I remember, yeah, then this person wrote in on top of the image something like, I might be a skyscraper on the inside, but not on the outside. Or I'm not sure exactly what the text was, but it was this play. And there's the famous, indeed, the US-centric question. Indeed, one, it was actually Seda who was drawing. I can't remember what she was trying to draw. It was probably kind of like a duck-like shape, maybe. And the recognizer came back with, are you a fire hydrant? And she said, you are US-centric, she wrote on the drawing. And indeed, knowing that the way that these kinds of models don't come out of nothing, but in fact come out of a particular set of training data. And mm-hmm. Yes, it was very influenced by, I mean, of course, just already the name fire hydrant, but also the fact that you would have people draw a fire hydrant or even know what the
what it would be.
Shape of a fire hydrant is, mm. is something that Americans know, but probably no one else in the world.
Unless they have looked at many Hollywood movies.
Yeah, that's true.
You're being trained in one way or another.
Exactly, yeah.
And to complete the trajectory, mm-hmm. Once these drawings had been made, they were then uploaded to a version of the Carmentis website where they were overlaying the existing instruments. So in a way, this whole circumvolutive process of recognition and misrecognition was used as a way to create a diverging version of the musical instrument website.
And this changed, like this forever changing database you have saved, is that something like this object that has changed over time, is it still there somewhere?
Definitely, yeah. No, there's lots of very different kinds of materials. In fact, I mean, so what we've decided for the final, the online exhibition is more or less a kind of, the final form is still indeed being developed, but the idea was just, we said, wow, we have so many different kinds of materials that have been produced and gathered. And so we want to sort of tell the story. We're basically just indeed making a kind of long form essay that uses a lot of the different kinds of materials. So indeed, you have this kind of original coloring book, you have actually mm-hmm. the drawings that people made and were photographed by the camera in the installation. Mm-hmm. There's also scans of the drawings that I did afterwards, which actually were much higher resolution and actually very nice to see, mm-hmm. also digitally. And there's work that we did before. I mean, it all started with scraping this database during the first work session. Mm-hmm. So there's that data, the interviews with the curator, Saskia Willerts, of the collection mm-hmm. are also sort of, so we're trying to actually piece together everything that's been sort of gathered and tell a sort of story through it.
I was wondering, in relation to diversion, and what does you think your project is saying in politically?
So, well, the first thing that comes to my mind anyway, I mean, is, you know, I think one connection, but it's maybe because indeed, I think it could have lots of takes on it. But, you know, I was rewatching actually the interview with Saskia actually. And it was interesting because it's actually in the first version of the publication. There's a small fragment from this interview process. I think we mm-hmm. interviewed her twice actually. But indeed, there was this question actually about the naming of things. And what I thought was interesting already in this kind of, because we have this kind of parallel archives, right? And parallel frames of interpretation. You have the kind of archivist and actually these collectors, actually, because that's very interesting. Saskia is talking about the historical history of these histories of these objects and how they were acquired and often, you know, purchased and or traded or and that these kinds of histories are actually stuff that's actually within Carmentis, but often not public. So that was actually when we were looking at the sort of back end of the Carmentis system. And she was telling stories indeed about how things like an instrument would have been misnamed by a kind of Western person who was in Africa and indeed is collecting objects of, you know, instruments, but actually to that person, it's maybe just a kind of exotic thing. Actually was in one case, for instance, was really using a name that in actuality was something that was much more generic. It was like, so it was like calling a very specific kind of guitar, you know, string or something like that, you know, which is like a sort of mismatch of even, it was the wrong kind of language. And in fact, actually, it's interesting because Saskia was then saying too about the fact that you needed this kind of In fact, you need actually sort of thesauri to deal with the fact that besides even that kind of errors, there's also just the fact that things are known in different cultures, different ways. And so often as well, instruments have correctly multiple names. And in any case, she was talking about how actually with digital tools, you would hope that you could have the ability to just use them all. You don't have to necessarily choose one. And that's, of course, still kind of problematic with a lot of digital systems. And so there's an interesting, I think, kind of friction then as well with then we're using an algorithmic frame to look at something, which has also been trained in totally different situation and not in a kind of a clean room of the archive. But and still there's this sense of a kind of reduction of like somehow that it's supposed to just detect what it is as if that was a kind of a singular thing. And I think in the kind of work that we've been doing, one of the things that I find interesting is just simply to break open that idea and start to talk about the fact that, yeah, actually you can use an algorithm, but it's still, it can also be used actually in this very generative way that it doesn't, if you sort of let go of this idea of somehow it being correct, it's actually becomes somehow much more interesting as well. And of course, it's also a way to talk about maybe the problematics of these algorithms and how they're being used and often again in a much more restrictive way of some idea giving truth.
There is one thing is to have a way to find how to data structures are coming into friction. On the one hand, you have the collection from the, let's say, the art institution with the curator, the labels, the sort of a very particular way of describing things that are, in a way, musical instruments. But actually, when you look at Carmentis, what you have is an image collection. So that's very important for me, that we are dealing with something that is essentially visual. And when you look at those pictures, if you're not a musician yourself, these things may be very different things. You are really in front of a visual material to which certain labels are assigned in a way that may seem arbitrary. And I'm not entering here into the whole historical and political history of how it's been acquired and so on and so forth. But even if you don't know anything about it, it's quite clear that this assignation of labels to images has been done in a certain way. And on the other hand, you have this algorithm that detects, that tries to assign labels to drawings and comes with its own training set, which is drawings that are done by people on their free time with different constraints and with a set of labels that is also historically and culturally extremely coded. The thing is, the game here was to see how to find a way to put them into friction. And the person in the installation who makes the drawing is a sort of articulator between these two, and also the person conveys or refuses to convey certain label. A lot of time people are trying to either trick the algorithm or to distort the drawing to have other labels. So there is a whole game going on in person who is drawing introduces in between these two sets of two structures. And as Michael said, with a lot of time, people are reacting to where the algorithm takes them or where also the database in the end stores the drawings they have done. So it's not frontal in ways. I think it's more as a game. It's playful, and I think it works more on sensibility than discourse. It's a way to be affected by what's happening there. So that's where I see it also as a way to give us a sort of thickness of all this mediation that goes through the algorithm, the database, the classification, and so on.
Because there's something that came up in the discussion with Martino and Zumana about somehow triangulating the relation with the institution. And because we were wondering about the fact that they, and like you, are using a mirrored or scraped version of the Carmentis database, are somehow setting up a relationship between the institution that is the museum, the institution that is the algorithm and its training, and the images in the database and the visitor that is somehow mediating between all this. So we were wondering about this non-frontal way of confronting the issues with the way these instruments are functioning within the Carmentis database or within these institutions.
I mean, I think indeed part of what's really interesting about breaking it out of that frame of the Carmentis site. And actually, I can remember really the moment even. There was a moment, I think, when we were having one of the early meetings of the group. And I had made a poster, actually, which was following along, you know, in ways that we had worked before and showing how algorithms can order things, the famous 11 orderings, and every you know, treatment has its own kind of ordering and implying a different story. And we were going around the room and everybody was talking about what they were going to make. And I think actually I remember as well, I was really inspired by Zumana and actually what he was showing with the early work on his collages. And I remember just leaving that meeting and actually kind of mad at myself for thinking like, because I was thinking, you know, how do you enable people to comment on, you know, the database? Suddenly this image of the coloring book came out because I thought like, you know, you don't even have to give an interface. You just, you know, give some a piece of paper and some crayons and people and give the sort of freedom to sort of interpret and do what you want with an image. And that something also, and just for me as a kind of digital designer too, that was something really kind of radical to let go of this idea that we will create the possibility to, yes, but in a very straightforward way and not in this kind of highly mediated way that digital technology often does. Mm-hmm. And based on the fact that actually you have these algorithms that actually can work within images, this becomes a possibility to say, okay, the interface is a piece of paper and a camera. So that's a little bit first. I mean, I think it's connected as well to though that it's such a kind of liberation as well then to get these materials out of the museum structure and allow them to be somehow reinterpreted and reworked. And in some funny way, we sort of let these instruments get played outside of the museum, not in a literal sense, and indeed in a kind of incorrect sense perhaps, but with a kind of imagination of the viewer. So that I find indeed very interesting then to think about how, once you kind of liberate it from the institution, how could it then feed back? Like, and so I would love it if actually somehow these interventions could somehow be there as when you come to either the physical museum or the Carmentis collection, what would that mean to sort of be taken off into these other kind of interpretations of the same objects?
So Mana and Martina were talking about, or with them, we were talking about the way their project is somehow trying to think about the flipping of the roles of the object and the structure. How, for example, by introducing Tzitzimin as the agent of change, so not the institution. So this is why I'm trying to talk about this not in a static sense, but as something that has the potential to change. But Tzitzimin is the agent that actually sets the collection on fire and somehow bypasses the hierarchy of going through the structure first, but at the same time has a deep impact on the structure. Mm-hmm. And somehow this is what they are continuing right now in thinking about the way the objects that are contained in the database can actually enact change on the database. And so their question, so what they were wanting to ask you about, you both, is how you saw the work of sketching recognition as a thinking through the structures within the objects, the images, and the structures of both recognition and the database around it. So how this interaction or this mutual touching of the structure in the image and the structure in the database and the naming systems and the labeling, mm-hmm. how they were being put in relation to each other.
Actually, it's interesting because where we sort of ended up, and this is really what Nicolas's been working on, I think for the online exhibition again, on just a very practical, functional level, actually what we started to experiment with was how in this kind of transformation of the image into its contours, and then actually part of as well how we connect it with the sketch recognition is in a way by redrawing the objects like contour by contour. So we add a kind of temporality to the construction of the image. And what we started to look at and sketch was this idea of how then, because you can start to label these drawings as they're drawn with the sketch recognizer. So it starts to see, is it a toothbrush? Is it a, it's one of its other. And the way that we can start to actually maybe make connections between these different databases just based on like the contours and start like actually how these ideas of then how sort of elements of a single contour in one shape, how you maybe could use those as links between indeed different images from the collection or between different collections. And so, yeah, in this kind of suggestive way, start to create these hybrids so in our working sketch, Nicola was making this kind of fusion drawings between whistles from the collection and tables from the sketch recognition. So that's actually just a kind of, in a way, through this deconstruction of the image into these objects, it does give you a kind of handle to actually rethink, recombine the database elements. And on a more actually, on just as a visitor, from a kind of viewer's perspective, I mean, I think that's what we really discovered actually with one of the first projects we did. Again, there's a longer lineage too of using this contour tracer to just slowly trace over an image. It really is an interesting way to just even get you to look again at objects. And that's something that was kind of a real discovery, which surprised me. There is something quite, interesting about how by suddenly digging into the image, even though it's just an image of an instrument, and kind of, you know, normally you think about how limited that is in relation to the original object. But through this kind of treatment of breaking it down visually, it in a funny way maybe opens up indeed these other kinds of possibilities of considering what it is you have a collection of. You have a collection of contours, and you have a collection of,
I like this. what it is you have a collection of, you know.
If there's something in Christina's work that you would like her to talk about, or if you have like a fully formed question or anything,
or and then maybe we'll come back. Question.
Yeah, if I had a question, I would it would probably revolve around the what the interview generates. The potential for the interview to diverge, or to if I remember well, she was saying she wanted to differentiate herself from the interviews for the second installment, and I was wondering, you know, it made me really curious this comment, and I was wondering like. What do you abandon when you distantiate yourself from the interview? You know?